2, argument has been waived in 12-2351, Louis D. versus Holder. So that means we will go on to case number 3. And that case is case 11-3470, United States versus Baca Baca.
Good morning, Ms. Jackson.
Good morning, Judge Rovner. Good morning. May it please the Court, Candace Jackson, Federal Defender Program, for Defendant Appellate Jorge Baca Baca. In this case, the District Court refused to consider Mr. Baca Baca's policy challenge to the illegal reentry guideline because the District Court believed that it was forbidden from considering such a policy challenge. The critical facts...
Forgive me for a minute, but was the argument to the sentencing court, was it that it should exclude the 16-level enhancement under 2L12B, God, 1A3 from the guidelines calculation, or did you argue, or was the argument that the court, having correctly calculated the guideline sentence without enhancement, should give a below-guideline sentence because 2L12B1A3 was a poorly reasoned addition to the guidelines? Which is it?
It's half of the latter. We conceded that the guidelines were correctly calculated. We then argued a variety of 3553A factors, and we objected to the 16-level enhancement on two grounds. The first was specifically as applied to Mr. Baca Baca's case. That was about the conviction that formed the basis for that enhancement. Our second objection to that 16-level enhancement was that the Sentencing Commission did not rely on national experience and empirical data, that's quoting from Kimbrough, in creating the increase. Therefore, it deserved less deference from the District Court when sentencing Mr. Baca Baca.
So could I just maybe tighten up your argument a little bit? Because it sounds like you conceded that on its face, the District Court judge correctly calculated the guidelines, meaning the offense level, criminal history, all of that. But to be a little more precise, it sounds like you're saying that the sentence that resulted from, or the recommended range that resulted from the 16-level enhancement was too high for a variety of reasons, some of which were particular to Mr. Baca Baca, and maybe some of which were just that this is not a well-reasoned guideline, so you shouldn't follow its advice. So you're not really saying there's anything wrong initially with the 16 levels. That's what the guidelines call for, but you were saying don't do that under the umbrella of 3553A?
That's exactly correct, Judge. And we, of course, had to concede that the guidelines were properly calculated. We have to do that in every case where that is the case.
Okay. And is that because the firearm conviction in 1996 supplied an independent basis to apply the 16-level increase?
It was not a firearm conviction. It was a conviction for aggravated battery. And that becomes relevant because it goes to our first objection to our first reason we thought the 16-level enhancement was severe in his case. It was a conviction for a fight. It wasn't a firearm conviction.
But does that firearm conviction supply an independent basis to...
That's what triggered the application of the 16-level enhancement.
Right. So if so, what I'm trying to figure out is what's the prejudice of any error relating to the court's application of the enhancement on any other ground?
Well, the enhancement is advisory only. So the prejudice there is that we never had an opportunity for the judge to consider whether he ought to not apply 16 levels at all or apply something less than 16 levels because the court concluded that he couldn't hear any argument about that issue at all.
Again, I'm going to urge talk about the levels are relevant to the calculation of the advisory guideline range. And the judge did the right thing for that because that was Mr. Baca Baca's record, you know, so the judge is taking an element that the probation office has correctly found. But you're saying that this sentence, just as we saw over and over again with the crack powder ratio in cocaine cases. People were correctly computing the advisory range, but there were arguments saying this may be the advisory range, but it's not a good range, and the Supreme Court winds up telling the district courts that they're entitled even a policy level to disagree with whatever the ratio may be, whether it's 100 to 1 or 18 to 1 or anything else. So I think precision is really important here, and if you're talking about the district judge making a mistake on the levels, you can't possibly win. If you're talking about the district court not realizing that once he's got the advisory range, he's entitled to say, but I think 16 levels is a really bad idea. You know, the range produced by this calculation is a bad idea. That's what he can do.
It's the second, Judge, and I apologize for any imprecision you are hearing from me now. We were making an argument that the judge can, from a policy perspective, disagree with these 16 levels, find that some lower range is more appropriate for Mr. Baka Baka, and sentence accordingly. And the response we got from the judge...
And that's all 3553A power.
As a 3553A consideration.
So what kind of a remand are you looking for?
We're looking for a full remand. That's what we're entitled to, we believe.
And why?
Because the error was not harmless here.
Because, you know, of course, the government thinks, well, we'll hear what the government thinks.
We're looking for a full remand because we have no way of knowing what the judge's sentence might have been had he considered our argument. The judge had a variety of options to consider and accept it, to consider and reject it, or even to pass over it in silence. The judge didn't do any of those. It can't be said that he passed over it in silence. He did speak up. He said, I can't consider this argument. So we have no way of knowing what the sentence might be, and the government can't show that it would be the same sentence. We simply don't know.
And I guess what you're also saying is, at this stage, it's impossible to dissect out this element of the judge's sentencing decision from anything else he was thinking about when he sentenced, which is why only a full remand would work.
That's correct, because in explaining his sentence, the judge did respond or make some noise about every other argument that Mr. Baka Baka raised. This was the one argument that he did not respond to. Once he foreclosed it very early in the hearing, he never once returned to it, despite our attempts to correct the government and the judge's mistaken interpretation of Aguilar Huerta. So we believe the judge clearly showed he didn't think he had the discretion that Kimbrough upheld, and that in doing that, he effectively treated the guidelines as mandatory, which is procedural error.
Do you see any danger whatsoever in sending the case back?
There's always an unknown. We have no idea what will happen at sentencing, but Mr. Baka Baka, under even this circuit's case law, deserves the opportunity to have the judge understand his discretion.
Okay.
I have reserved time for rebuttal, so if there are no further questions at this time.
Good morning, Ms. Woodall. Come on up.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Myrta Woodall for the United States. Firstly, we concede, as we stated in our brief, that the U.S. Attorney at the sentencing hearing did misstate the law with regard to Aguilar and that the judge agreed with that misstatement. However, the record shows that the defendant had the opportunity to correct that error subsequently, and after this correction was made, the court correctly stated on the record that the guidelines were not mandatory.
But not that no. Sort of misstates the sequence. The defense lawyer's in the middle of trying to correct that, and suddenly the government interrupts with this typo correction, and it's only at the very end that the judge, in a generic sense, says, I'm sure he knows, I have discretion. I didn't take much comfort from that.
Well, Your Honor, after he made that generalized statement that the guidelines were not mandatory, he did discuss specifically that he would have considered a lower sentence in this case had it not been for the defendant's egregious record. And that's where he went on to discuss the defendant's criminal record, the fact that he'd been deported two times, the fact that he had been a gang member. So those were really the things that were driving the sentencing decision.
But we don't know that.
Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say we don't know that because the judge has said, here is a major point with which I'm not empowered to disagree, which is the sentence that results from the application of the 16 levels. And I think it really is quite close to the old arguments we heard before Kimbrough about the crack powder discrepancy. Judges would say, well, that's really embedded in the statute. I can't really do anything about it. So they'd impose these high sentences. And then when it turned out they did have discretion, as you would expect, some judges took it into account, other judges didn't. It's a discretionary matter, but I don't know how you can unscramble the eggs here with a mistake right at the beginning.
Well, Your Honor, this particular argument is one that is basically a stock argument. It has been made repeatedly in the past, and in a recent case, Ramirez-Mendoza, this court observed that a sentencing court does not have to address every stock argument made.
I really hate that phrase, stock arguments, because it turns out that it's used sometimes about arguments that are sometimes the person's most important argument, perhaps mental disability or something of the sort. Sometimes it's used to brush things off. I find it actually not helpful to understand which arguments the judge needs to grapple with. Mr. Baca-Baca certainly was saying, in my case, the sentence that results from the 16-level enhancement is the wrong sentence, and the judge just shuts him down.
Well, but then after he makes that finding, he does discuss the possibility of a lower sentence, but by discussing the criminal background of the defendant, he finds that
it's
not merit.
But only in the context of feeling constrained that it can't go down any lower.
Tell me this. Are there any cases that support your view that a limited Palladino-style remand is sufficient, where a district court has violated settled law by treating a guidelines provision as mandatory?
I don't have a case that I can recall right now.
And especially one where the defendant clearly preserves the error. Palladino was a whole bunch of plain error cases.
Yeah. Has nothing to do with anything, but I'm fascinated because I have not seen this for a long, long time. You are a special assistant United States attorney?
Yes.
Why?
I work for ICE, but I do a rotation in the U.S.
I see.
I wondered too.
I know. Thank you. We're curious souls.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say here. To me, we've got error.
Okay.
So I just might as well tell you that.
That's okay, Your Honor. All I can say is that, after Aguilar Huerta, this type of argument, the court didn't need to address it. So it would seem like the court did not make an error just because it didn't mention it in its decision, but that's the only point I'm going to make. We would ask this court to affirm the conviction and sentence of the district court. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice to have you. How much? 2 minutes. We have to stay to our schedules today. Normally I pretend I'm Lady Bountiful, but we can't do it today.
If the court has further questions, I'm happy to answer them. Otherwise, that's all we have.
Thank you. Case will be taken under advisement.